I'm very excited to talk about this movie. And on that note, folks, welcome to another episode of Not Another Film Podcast. This is the podcast where we take movies we used to love as kids and we re-examine them in the harsh, sobering, and quarantined light that comes through our windows in our basement apartments in 2020. And today, we are here to talk about the greatest visual effects the 90s had ever given us.
Jurassic Park who?
Exactly. We're talking Dragonheart here on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And we are joined by first-time guest, Jay Donnelly. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing great. I am super stoked to be here. I've loved listening to the podcast, and I love talking movies with friends, and I have not been able to do much of that for the last month and change.
Well, we got a lot to talk about in this. This is a quest. This is a quest. This is a con movie. This is your run-of-the-mill fantasy.
It's a buddy movie.
It's a buddy movie.
It's a pet movie.
Yeah, there's so many layers to Dragonheart underneath the scales. So many layers.
Gotta peel them back to get at that heart.
Exactly. We're also joined by Lauren Thompson. How are you?
I'm great.
Fantastic. I'm Ian Gears. I'm one of your other co-hosts. And I'm doing A-okay as well. So like we always do with this podcast, we want to go into what the first time you had experienced this film. Jay, since you're the one who wanted to do this movie, why Dragonheart? What about this movie speaks to you in 2020?
Yeah, so it was just a matter of, like, you know, having listened to the podcast a bunch and thinking back to, like, what were some movies that I loved as a kid, and, like, specifically ones that I could remember watching it for the first time. And so this one came to mind right away, which, like, otherwise I hadn't thought about it in forever. But it, because, like, yeah, even as a kid, I didn't watch it that much. I saw it in the theater. I rented it a couple of times. We had one, like, CD-ROM game that was,
I had the game.
Okay.
Like, there's a game?
Oh, there was a game.
Wait, can I find the game? I want to play the game.
Maybe you can find the game. I don't
know
what
a place.
The recesses of Reddit have a lot of things.
Yeah. I'm going to find it. I'm going to find a little playthrough on YouTube, and I'm going to watch it tonight.
You're going to hang out with Draco for...
if there was ever a time when I have enough time to watch a Let's Play of the Dragonheart game, it is right now, Ian.
This is
the
true.
Stars
I have nothing
line.
Else going on.
Well, so you saw this in a movie in theaters?
Yeah, yeah. So it was 96. Yeah, it was in the
96.
Summer. 96. And so, like, something I always looked forward to as a kid, which I don't think a lot of kids did, was Vacation Bible School.
Oh, hell yeah.
Cool.
So
talk us through.
And the way it worked is that my mom and dad would take me to my grandparents' house, and my aunt and uncle would take my three older cousins to my grandparents' house. And we would stay with my grandparents for the week, and each morning... Yeah, we'd get up, go to Bible school, do all the activities and singing and games and stuff, come back, and then my dad, he'd usually be working on the baseball field, so he'd come back in the afternoon, and he'd pick us up and take us on, like, a field trip every day. So we would go, like, go to the beach and go dune climbing, or go to, like, mini golf and go-karts, and we'd always watch a movie at some point. Mm-hmm. And so, like, at this point, so I was 8, and, you know, my cousins were all... you know, getting into their teens, two of them in their teens, one of them getting into his teens. And so I think he just didn't want to take us all to, like, a super kidsy movie. So he was like, all right, you know, it's like an action adventure film, but it still is a giant cartoon dragon. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's like 50% a kid's film.
All right, you little assholes, get ready.
And so I remember him, he pointed out to me that it was PG-13, or maybe I pointed it out to him. I was a big stickler for rules. I'm like, I'm only 8. He's like, it's okay, because you're, you know,
going to Vacation
with...
Bible School. I can't break the law like this.
I'm
going to,
like, be judged tomorrow morning.
Like that.
Yeah. I got my meeting before the board. Like, Peter, Gabriel, they're all going to be there. Like, Peter Gabriel is going to be there.
I'm never going to make Peter it into Gabriel. The stars with the other dragons.
Yeah. I won't make it.
I can't do it. I'm not going to graduate.
Soul vanished.
Yeah. As if it never existed, which Ian pointed out is just Judaism.
Oh man, dragon religion is just Judaism. It's like, I've got to do good enough deeds to get into heaven, and if I don't, then it's just kind of like, eh. And it's like, yeah, that's how being Jewish is.
I hope
like, you got to be good enough to get into heaven, otherwise, you know, eh. What are you gonna do?
I hope to get to see your constellation.
Yes.
It's just kind of, it's the meh emoji. It's just me and the stars with my, like, shoulders shrugged. I look like the, yeah, like a bad Curb Your Enthusiasm poster option. Like, So, Lauren, when was the first time you saw this movie?
I don't remember how old I was when I saw it, but I remember it's a movie that my mom showed me because she figured I would like it. I had gone through a unicorn phase when I was like a kid, and then when I hit my tweens, I went through a dragon phase, which has nice. Kind of never stopped. I'm still a big dragon stan. But I remember, I think I was reading the Aragon books, probably, and I was really into, well, I say the Aragon books, the first book. They're all downhill after that. But I was really into dragons, and my mom was like, oh wait, I've never shown you Dragonheart. So I remember, like, she sat me down and watched this with me.
This is an important part of our family's history, Lauren.
Like, I think I remember watching this movie and Lady Hawk within the same week.
Whoa.
Weirdly, those two movies are, like, very, like, linked in my brain for some reason. And I remember really liking it. Although this is one of those movies that's one of the few movies we've done on this podcast that I've liked even more when I come back to it.
Mm.
Like, I fucking love this. Honestly, awesome. I have no shame. This movie fucking rocked. Like, I can't explain it. I loved it. I teared up. I loved the I got goosebumps. I was in it. I had a great time. I laughed out loud multiple times.
It's wild.
Like, it's not perfect yeah. film, but God, it brought me so much joy today, and I was really excited by that.
Yeah. I don't remember... I don't think I saw this in theaters, which breaks my heart.
Yeah.
But...
I was definitely too young to see this in theaters.
I do remember, my family used to have a tradition every Friday night, most Friday nights. If we didn't go to the movies, we'd at least go to a movie store, and we would rent movies. I would get to rent something, my sister would get to rent something, and my mom would rent something. And I remember, for a while, we would go to a Blockbuster... And at the Blockbuster...
Boo, Hollywood Video all the way.
Well, we started going to a Hollywood Video. We started doing Hollywood Video later.
You got to go to Hollywood Video and you got to get the cookie dough bites.
That's the cookie dough
bites. Yeah.
Those were... We saved cookie dough bites for the movies.
When you go to the movies, and then we would go to the Publix next door and we would get a full baguette and she would, and my mom would get half the baguette.
And we'd stuff the cookie dough bites into the baguette and then you'd shove it in your face torpedo style.
My mom and I would do this thing where we would get a baguette at Publix and then we would get a full jar of tomato sauce. And then we would,
are you making
sauce.
A bomb? What are you doing? So you get a full baguette, you get a giant jar of tomato sauce, and you get some ball bearings. Then
there's an order PVC. To it. You gotta like sit in the kitchen. You put the tomato sauce.
If you're not in the kitchen, this doesn't work.
You pour half the tomato sauce into a bowl, and then you straight up just dunk the baguette, like rip off pieces of the baguette, dunk in the tomato sauce. And then, like, you watch the movie, and the cookie dough is a nice little surprise during the movie as your dessert. And that's your dinner
in,
for the night.
Wait, yeah, hold on.
Pizza bread?
No!
Okay. It's just, it sounded like you're hunting through bread and tomato sauce and finding cookie dough bites as a treat.
And you bite the bread that's got the marinara, and occasionally you bite into a cookie dough bite.
You do the bread and the tomato sauce while you're still in the kitchen, while you're, like, putting away groceries. Be like, I'm gonna eat half a baguette just, like, as dinner, because I would do that. That was, like, a treat. Vegetarian households are strange, y'all. I promise my parents gave me real food. Between this and the chocolate sandwiches, I realized my parents look really bad.
Bread was a treat. Cookie dough bites were a right.
You would have dinner beforehand, which was the baguette and the tomato sauce.
Oh, I got it.
And then you would watch the movie, and then the cookie dough bites were like halfway through the movie. You like break out the cookie dough bites.
So the cookie dough bites are in the movie?
You have to fight through the movie to get them.
That's why I love this movie so much, because cookie dough bites. Like, did you miss the part where the dragon like snorted all of the fire out and then cookie dough bites just came out of the TV? You guys didn't have that experience?
In the 4D version of this movie.
I know. I wish that was what 4D was, truly.
So we would go to, at the Blockbuster, I remember vividly.
Oh my God.
I also, like most red-blooded American men, had a huge obsession with dragons when I was a kid.
As well, you should.
Yeah.
And girls.
Yeah, and I was just
blooded American girls.
Well, this is news to me. I thought girls liked other things. Like, you know, I thought they were into already like foreign policy and stuff by the time I was watching this movie.
For the fact that girls can love unicorns and then dragons.
You know what? I've seen those posters.
Yeah.
And they're wanted posters. No, I'm kidding. But I remember like begging my mom to let me rent this movie because I thought that the dragon looked so real. And so cool that I was like, holy shit,
this is the future of filmmaking. I mean, I'm yeah, 6 years old. And
and you were right. And you're still right.
I have a firm memory of every time I went into that Blockbuster for like the next 2 or 3 years, this movie was playing in the Blockbuster.
Like on the TVs in the Blockbuster?
Yeah, you know how they would show movies on the TVs? It was like every time I went to Blockbuster, Dragonheart was on. It was either Dragonheart or First Night, like one of those two movies.
That's me every time I walk into a grocery store, Uptown Girl Place.
And they hide all the baguettes.
Yep. Is that not a universal human experience? Uptown Girl playing every time you go into a grocery store?
I want to say yes.
That idea of being like a little kid and thinking the special effects, like the dragon looks so real.
I thought the same thing when I saw this. I loved it.
Yeah. I've been like dealing with some of that over again because they just did the first part of the remake for Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, the reboot, yeah.
And so like I think it was just a kid thing. Like the way that I used to look at the old graphics and imagine what I saw versus what was actually there, because now I've got something to compare it to.
It's wild when you go back and watch them. Like I watch Jurassic Park's in like my top five favorite movies of all time. I've seen that movie probably 100 times. And every time I go back and watch it, like we watched it maybe like 5 or 6 months ago because Lauren had never seen it. And I was just like amazed at how good all of the effects in Jurassic Park hold up.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you go back and you watch something like this and you're like, oh, half of this movie is just Dennis Quaid and Shrek. And like, it's like, this movie's got more in common with Who Framed Roger Rabbit than Lord of the Rings.
Like, I will say, if you look at any of the trailers for the sequels, it somehow gets much worse. And you realize in retrospect how good the effects are in this movie.
That was one of the most bizarre things, is that when I was looking up the trailer, when I was getting ready to watch it again, I was like, oh yeah, like how did I even get introduced to this? Let me see the trailer. And I saw there were sequels.
Oh,
there's like five sequels.
There are five movies in the Dragonheart legacy.
I think there's one coming out this year.
Yes, 2020.
Bro, it's already out. Dragonheart Vengeance has been on Netflix since February.
What am I doing with my life?
If you go on Netflix right now, humble listeners, you will see all five Dragonheart movies. That almost equals one real movie Netflix.
We have not gotten to recommendations yet, okay? That is my job.
This is true.
To recommend Dragonheart Vengeance.
I do remember seeing the second one, A New Beginning. I do remember renting that because it had Chris Masterson, who played the oldest brother on Malcolm in the Middle, and I remember really liking Malcolm in the Middle.
That's who that guy is.
And I was like, hell yeah.
I was like, is that Neil Patrick Harris? Who is this?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Neil Patrick Harris is the better version of Chris Masterson. so I was obsessed with the visuals in this movie. And I love seeing how I've just been right since I was a kid. So let's dive in.
Yeah.
This movie was obviously made in 1996. It was based on a story by a guy named Patrick Reed Johnson.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
This is fascinating. He pitched the story. He had written it as a novel, but had not published it yet. So he's like, he did a Michael Crichton thing of like, I want to get a movie option for my novel before I publish the novel. And a lot of studios were incredibly interested because it was like, you know, we wanted these kind of like lighthearted fantasy adventure films at the time. Like First Night had been really, really big, and Prince of Thieves had been huge. Like, you know, Waterworld, not so much. But, you know, we're getting there. We're balancing it out with all these other things. So he shouted around and eventually got picked up. It's just like going to be a huge movie. The budget for this movie in the 90s, very, very large. We'll play the budget game later.
Ooh, okay.
But it got... Then when it was bought by Universal, they let someone named Charles Edward Pogue write the screenplay for it. And he decided, along with the director, Rob Cohen, to do a little bit of rewriting on this movie. Mm. Because apparently Patrick Reed Johnson wanted this movie to be a lot more classic fantasy. He wanted more of a Prince of Thieves, like both feet firmly planted in a dramatic action fantasy film.
Mm. Okay.
And Rob Cohen and the other writer were like, we kind of want to add some more fart jokes. And what if every time the dragon breathed fire, it was like boogers that he shot out of his nose? Which is why half of this movie looks and sounds and reads like you're watching Prince of Thieves. And then the other half kind of looks like they're like, okay, guys, the Ren Faire is closed. We can shoot on the sets till 5. Like, come on, bus everyone in. And it's wild.
Oh, she doesn't have red hair in real life. Marital wigs? Can she yeah. beat that?
Apparently he was the guy who wrote the novel for it had a really big problem with the way they presented, oh my God, what's his name? Ionin? The king.
Ionin.
David Thewlis. Had a really big problem with the way they wrote that character because in his mind he was like a quiet, an invalid who didn't really know he was blessed. And then out of that like quietness and like reserve, he would randomly go into fits of like crazy rage and he'd be like this unpredictable villain. And he was like, no, you guys made him into a brat and he fucking sucked and he couldn't grow and there was no like, he was just a two-dimensional bad guy.
Yeah.
Saying that now, I love David Thewlis in this movie.
He's great.
Oh, I think he's does awesome. It wonderfully.
Oh, he's my great. God. So let's dive in.
Yeah.
We begin this movie, dancing lessons, fencing practice with Dennis Quaid as the.
What a strange flex by this movie to cast Dennis Quaid.
As one of the king's knights, and his name is Bowen. He's our lead character.
Which I could never remember.
I'm going to throw in really quick, too. Throughout this, I may accidentally refer to him as Kevin Costner, because in my mind, they're the same person, and I'm trying to get better at it.
The hair is very, like, yeah.
Okay.
It's very Robin Hood.
This is my first note about this part of the movie. Dennis Quaid is wildly miscast in this movie. Dennis Quaid, I never realized till watching this that it's like, oh, no. Some faces just don't belong in, like, 10th century.
Yeah. It's like the problem with the most recent Three Musketeers movie where it's just like, no, like that Logan Lerman looking dude does not belong here.
Yeah, not like the 93 Three Musketeers, which is dope because Charlie Sheen belongs there.
Oh my God, yes.
Certain faces just don't work. I think Dennis Quaid won me over by the end. I think it's also just the fact that it's like, with a movie that is a full period, like British cast movie, there are some actors that not only, like, don't appear, like, to fit the time period, but also just, like, are too aggressively American.
Yeah. Dennis Quaid being one of them.
Like, he's, like, a very all-American actor. And so there are some actors that you just can't get that association out of your brain. It's like, if you thought, like, Ian at one point said that he was doing, like, kind of a Harrison Ford type thing, and I'm like, that's another person that I think just would never work in something like this.
Well, it felt like he was doing a Harrison Ford impression for a lot of the movie.
Once you like, yeah, like sort of like the way like he talks about like the old code throughout the movie, it's almost like the old code is code for like America.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah.
He's just like bringing that into all of it.
I appreciate
like what like the KKK. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea, dude. Well, what are you talking about?
Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm a little uncomfortable.
It's part of the charm of the movie where he kind of does give off like a Brendan Fraser in The Mummy kind of vibe of just like this roguish, charming, handsome, obviously. I mean, it's Dennis fucking Quaid.
If Brendan Fraser was playing this role, it would be my favorite movie. That's my hot take.
I don't want to see Brendan Fraser in a wig that long.
I do.
Not after George of the Jungle.
George of the Jungle, you look great in George of the Jungle. I love what are George you of the Jungle. About? What are you talking about, Ian? You're insane. He's never looked better.
This audience is called baiting.
We are about to have a fucking fight right now.
So he's training the king's son, Einan. Einan? Anal? What's his Einan?
Einan, I think. I believe
he's Einan. Training Einan had a fight. Einan already appears like a little bitch. My first note on this dude is like, don't trust this kid. No. I didn't remember a lick of this movie except for the visual effects. But as soon as I saw this kid on screen, he looks kind of like Herbert from Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
I thought the same thing.
Right? He looks like he grew up to be the albino in The Princess Bride.
Yes!
Yeah!
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God, yes. Oh, that kid sucks so bad.
Yeah, and that's probably better because I feel like this movie tries to like shoots for Princess Bride, but doesn't It's kind of like the B-movie version of Princess Bride.
So when I was watching it, Megan was at her place. We were just on the phone and started it at the same time. And that opening scene where they're fencing in the broken down castle, she was just like, yeah. Princess Bride?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That was like her first comment.
Well, and it's got that sweeping score that we've heard so much. The score for this movie is incredible.
I remembered all of it.
That is something I as I was watching it, I kept finding bits and pieces that would come back to me a little bit before. Or, like, I get the feeling, like, oh, yeah, there's a visual here that I know I, like, stuck with me. But the score especially, and, like, I figured out why it stuck with me, too. I mean, it's a good score. But, like, on top of that, as I was watching, I was like, I know what this is. I know what this is. And then I waited till the end and I looked it up. The guy that does the music for this also did the music for The Last of the Mohicans and Gettysburg, which is a movie I watch every year.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. And he did this. The score for this has been used in tons of movie trailers and had been used as the official music for the American broadcast of the 2004 Olympics.
That is fantastic.
It's like a very famous piece of music. Like very stealthily. Like I listened to this and immediately remembered every note, was like humming along, was jamming, and like I immediately got an emotional reaction. I also realized like halfway through it must have been like, it truly seems like it must be the case that like when they were making when they were doing Lord of the Rings, that they were like, we want a theme like this theme. Mm-hmm. Because it is so similar to one of the themes in Lord of the Rings. That like main adventure theme, like do 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 do. It is so evocative of that particular theme.
Yeah.
And it's a really good theme. Like I think the music truly elevates a lot of this movie.
Yeah.
To like another level.
Oh yeah, I buy that.
The stars without the music would not be as impactful.
But with the music, gorgeous.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Well, and what's crazy is there are a couple moments in this movie, we'll get to them, where they choose not to throw music in, and it's like, what's happening here?
Yeah.
Especially in fights. Because what we find out is happening is there's another peasant rebellion, and the peasants are rebelling because the king's a total d-hole. And is
as
like,
they usually are.
Yeah, and is like, we're going to tax the peasants and you know, they got to pay us to stay on our land and all this other, garbly gook nonsense. I couldn't find historically if this had any precedent anywhere. Could you find anything?
I love history. And one of the things that got me in this movie is like for having Dennis Quaid and a cartoon dragon and all sorts of ridiculousness. Historically, I was actually like impressed. Like in the beginning.
Pretty accurate?
Yeah, like, well, you see, like, the fort that they take him to initially. It's an old-fashioned Mott and Bailey, which makes sense for the 900s. And then he talks about rebuilding the castle that was Roman ruins, which makes sense. He talks about, like, the dragon knows the queen because she's the descendant of a Celt and their whole religion. And then, too, like when they get to the battles later, they're not crazy huge because under the feudal system, you had, like, the king or the lord had like a tight cadre of knights that were really good at fighting. And then everybody else was like, you forced your peasants to levy and fight for you. But like most medieval era battles are tiny compared to like the classic era or like the more imperial eras that come later. So there's a lot of historical beats that I was like, this all matches up.
Yeah. And it's not like open field combat. It's like, it's more like a skirmish in the woods. And it's like, and also a lot of like the fighting wasn't this like really cool. A lot of times you'll see like in these types of movies, they're like, they're using broadswords, but they're doing moves that are much fancier, like rapier style things. Or it's like, it felt at least like pretty realistically clunky.
Apparently Rob Cohen, the director of the movie, he and Dennis Quaid were really, felt really strongly that they wanted a lot of Asian influence over Bowen's technique. So they brought in kendo artist, like to come over and teach him like certain kendo moves that
makes complete sense to me.
Yeah, because Jay also is a really big fight guy for you audience members out there, and so I know that you would know a lot of this stuff. So you want to talk a little bit about Bowen's fighting style?
Yeah. So like watching the fights. In general, I mean, I can talk about it now. We can talk about it like as we've gotten to like the battle, because by that point we've gotten through most of the fights. I can save it for there to like talk about them in whole if you want. However you want to do it.
Yeah, let's just talk about it now.
Yeah, well, we can talk about Bowen now, and then as we get to each fight, because I mean, we're about to get to how this little kid gets just fucking murked by this by the girl from Brave, like.
Right.
But so Bowen, like, did you? Because I I didn't realize that. And then when I looked at like the fact that told me that, I started looking at his fighting a little bit more. And yeah, there is a little bit of a formality to his fighting that I did not realize. Yes.
So it was really interesting to me watching him, and it makes sense. So I didn't know about them trying to get like, you know, a kendo guy or more Eastern influence. Because a couple of things I noticed is that there was proper weight to the weapons, like Lauren was saying. Like, it's not too fancy, but yeah. it also, it's got a bit of that. I love, like, classic samurai films.
Yeah.
It's got a bit of the katana style to it where, because you've got people that, like, for a very long time had just ditched shields. And so most of your attacks, they're off the blade then in, which, like, in a lot of medieval fighting wouldn't make any sense. You know, they're using a shield, they're blocking stuff, and you're trying to get the sword to the body any way you can. Versus, yeah. like, fencing, you might try to, like, do a disengage or something to, you know, shunt the blade away and open up your target. And so he's got a little bit more of that, but it's still, like, a katana is a pretty broad sword, like a long sword, and so it's got the right weight to it. But it makes him look unique, which helps for, like, you know, him being, like, a master-at-arms type character. The other thing that I liked is that the way it was shot, it was all pretty broad. It wasn't tight shots that were cut too suddenly where you don't know what's happening in the fight. And that's a very Eastern thing. Like in Hong Kong cinema, in Japan, the fight choreographer is treated with a lot more story respect. Like he gets to be in the editing room and he's in charge of the fight so that you see them all the way through, versus like in the West sometimes you'll have fight choreographers put together a fight, it gets shot, and then when they watch it, they're like, oh, I mean, it looks like they're fighting, but I know because I choreographed it, that move that's happening now should have happened like 5 beats ago, because it's just being cut around for feel versus the presentation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. It's really, really interesting that they do a lot of that. So the director of this movie, Rob Cohen, we have to induct him into the Not Another Film Podcast Hall of Fame. He's the director of The Fast and the Furious.
Oh!
And Triple X. Future episode, if I have anything to say about it.
I'm not going to be on that one. I can't watch Triple X again. I've watched it once. I've paid my dues to the universe.
No. You watched Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage.
No,
you didn't watch Triple X.
We turned on the first one. We did. Don't tell me I didn't do that. I remember.
Well, you know,
I've seen two of those films. Don't tell me I didn't.
The Ice Cube one doesn't exist. So we're fighting these peasants, and Bowen's like really not about it. This is how you can tell he's a cool dude. He's like, I don't want, like, no, we shouldn't be fighting the peasants. This is ridiculous. I don't agree with the king here. And you see he's got strong convictions because he's the only member of like the king's guard essentially that is standing up against the king's wishes. And while this happens, they go into this fight. This is incredible. The king gets pulled off of his own horse by the peasants, and they beat the shit out of him. And then
there's this amazing like almost comedic beat where they like are all like zombie style ripping into him, and then they all look up at once, look out to the field, and the guy just goes, "The fight's out there!"
And they go, they all run. They all just run. It's like, "Hey!" And everybody just like, "What?" And then they run away.
Like all at once, like it synchronized so well that it was so funny.
It was very funny.
And they just leave the king behind. The king, arguably the goal of this,
right,
is to kill the king, and they're just like, he's like mostly dead. It'll be fine. He's not going anywhere.
Then the best moment of this fight happens. This little Herbert Prince picks up the crown. No, like, so like wrestles the crown away from,
right,
his father.
The king revives for a second.
This asshole, like, just like, oh shit, dad, I'm sorry. Give me that fucking crown.
Fucking die, bitch.
Die, dad.
Real Joffrey.
Yeah, pulls the crown. And then he's looking at it, and he's like, oh my gosh, my precious, my new baby crown. And this girl just like, oopsie daisy, bumps into him and impales him in the heart.
He gets pushed on a post. He gets pushed into like a post that just like impales the shit out of him. And she's like, oopsie daisy.
That village, not child friendly. Very sharp edges.
No, this is not baby proofed in any way.
It leads me to believe like if she did that to him on accident. And then, like, it's just like, wow, how many other people have she bumped into?
Dude, spoiler alert, she's fucking lethal later in this film. She murders, like, 8 dudes, and I loved it.
Yeah.
She is a murder machine. I loved it. She's fucking feral from beginning to end, and I loved it.
Nothing
she
kills
starts
more
at a young age.
I love literally everything about her except for her wig. Every single thing about her except for that sweet, sweet baby. I'm so sorry you had to wear that wig and you couldn't just dye your regular hair red.
It's so weird because, like, unless I'm losing my mind, Dina something. She's in Starship Troopers.
Uh-huh. Yes,
she has frizzy red hair. Why did they put her in a wig?
I truly don't know because that wig is like I have worn the full gamut of wigs. I have worn great wigs. I have worn terrible wigs. Like really, really like $10.
I've worn
wigs.
Tall wigs. I've worn small wigs. I've worn red wigs. I've worn bad wigs.
He ain't wrong. I've worn wigs that like were $10. Like I've seen like from the store like, oh, this is a Party City $10 wig that looked better than this.
And
like,
Uptown Girl played the whole time.
Truly, like no one on the production team, like no costumer or any type of supervisor said, oh, maybe we should push it back so that she like actually has a forehead.
So I actually know a little bit about this.
Like she has no forehead whatsoever.
So this was also her entire storyline, the character of Kara, her entire storyline.
I'll call her Merida this entire episode.
Was one of the biggest victims of the discrepancy between the writer and director. Because the writer wanted her to have more of a classic heroine's arc where she was a little bit more concerned with kind of being the leader of the peasants and of her community. But also that meant her finding love. So she would apparently, there were several scenes written in about like where she would just monologue about what she wanted and love and all these things. And Rob Cohen was like, nah, what if she's just like double wielding axes and she's barely has any dialogue?
But Rob Cohen, like, you know what? If I'm given the choice, like as a representation for women, like you can have more lines, but they're all about a dude, or like you can have no lines, but you can double wield axes and murder a shit ton of dudes, I'm going to choose option B any day.
I think look at the runtime of the movie. The movie clocks in at like an hour and 42 minutes.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's a lot of the stuff that apparently didn't make it was like scenes of her giving monologues about how important love is. Ugh. And there was like an entire scene between Pete Postlethwaite and Dennis Quaid that just talked about like what they wanted out of life. And it was more of a character building thing. And the director's like, fuck that. Nah. If there's no action or dragons, we don't want it.
Yeah.
Right. You save that for the TV show. This is a movie.
This is a movie.
We're moving.
Like exactly. I love that they don't kiss in the movie. Like I think that's great.
Oh yeah.
Like it's great. Thank you. I appreciate that. Especially because she's a literal child when Dennis Quaid's an adult, and then when he's apparently the same exact age, she's an adult now. Like I just it's weird.
Full on Sin City.
I don't like that. I did not care for it.
So this kid gets murked by a post and they have to take him.
And that like real quick, that was one of those specific scenes is after he takes the shot to the chest like where like they're carrying him away and there's like the dirt and the dust and the milk that gets knocked over hurt like with the blood together. I don't know why, but as a little kid, I was just like, this means something.
It means something.
It's great because the blood effect there, it looks like someone like dropped their Pedialyte. The reddest blood.
No, see, to me it totally red is like she's standing there and like the milk is on the ground and then like she just looks down and like blood is in there. To me it looks like she's like, oh man, I accidentally killed the prince and my period started for the first time.
Big day.
What a big day for me.
Big day to become a woman.
What a big day for me. Being a woman is crazy.
At least they happened at the same time and not one before the other.
I know, right? Crazy.
So they take, so the mom is like, we gotta heal our little baby. So
cares nothing that her husband's dead, which is good because he's the worst.
Yeah,
like,
fuck
whatever,
that guy.
Fuck him.
It's like, I know exactly what we'll do. We'll go to the dragon's keep. we're gonna heal my boy.
This is, hey, dragon, can you do us the hugest favor? We have no reassurances that this will pay off for you in any way.
Yeah.
But can you just, like, give up half your life for my kid, that is probably a piece of shit?
So the dragon is, like, he adheres to Arthurian code. The old code, whenever they talk about the old code, is in reference to Arthurian code.
Yes.
The
only code.
Yeah, and so the dragon is, like, a beast of his word. It's voiced by Sean Connery.
Oh.
And just amazing. Amazing.
So good.
There were like every actor that you could imagine that would be in like the same graduating class as Sean Connery was offered this role. And I have no idea why it took so long just to get to Sean Connery, but like Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, Ian McKellen, like Patrick Stewart eventually played the voice of one of these dragons in one of these shitty spinoffs.
Roger Dalton would be really good.
Yeah.
Roger Dalton would have been a real good dragon. Didn't he play dragon at some point?
Roger Dalton?
I feel like Roger Dalton played some sort of dragon at some point.
I would not be surprised.
You mean Roger Moore or Timothy Dalton?
Oh, sorry. Timothy Dalton. I'm thinking Timothy Dalton. My bad.
Timothy Dalton. Right.
Are
Timothy
you thinking
Dalton
Hot has Fuzz?
Played, no, he has played a dragon at some point. I'm going to look it up. You guys keep talking. Now it's in my head.
A great big bushy beard. So the dragon gives up half of his heart to save this little boy. And we cut to 12 years later. And he's like, boy, I swear to fucking God, dude. If you... become a little asshole and start like repeating the sins of your father, like I'm gonna come for you. So like don't do that. And the kid's like, yeah, I'm chill. And so they're like, okay, good, because seriously, don't be a dick. And 12 years later, guess what? This kid's a huge dick, raging asshole, hasn't cut his hair in 12 years,
burning out eyes left and right.
Oh my god. And it is a gleeful performance by David Thewlis. It's like, awesome.
You know, it's like, we're not going to have any depth. Don't worry about that. But trade that all in for just the worst. Explore one direction as far as you can.
Exactly. Meanwhile, he's still killing all these people. And Dennis Quaid wrongfully assumes, well, it's because you got that dragon heart in you. That's what's making you a bad guy. So he vows to kill every single dragon. As his way of revenge for essentially being part of the creation of a tyrant. And that brings us up to the movie, because we see him kill a dragon, and then eventually
he literally commits genocide against an entire race because he thinks one dragon was a dick.
Apparently every dragon resides in England.
Yeah. And also like didn't bother to be like, yo, hey dragon, let's talk. Why is he a dick? And then the dragon could have been like, because he sucked, and he sucked beforehand. Sorry, bro.
So he after he kills one dragon, he saves Pete Postlethwaite, who plays brother Gilbert.
Who's so a good old-fashioned hype man. If you watch The Witcher, it's basically the Bard and The Witcher. It's basically Jaskier.
Can we jump into that real quick?
Please.
Yeah, please, because I figured we were going to talk about it eventually. So much of this is The Witcher.
Yeah, as soon as I saw Brother Gilbert and then like the whole scene with him, you know, like riding through, he's got the black armor on, the long hair. At some point he's using two swords. He's got specific gear for taking down dragons. He's got his hype, man.
Yeah. Like, and Brother Gilbert's like literally composing a song about his adventures. And I'm like, oh, toss a coin to your dragon slayer. Like, fuck yes.
Yeah.
That's literally
toss
what this
is. Toss a coin to Dennis Quaid.
Toss a coin to Dennis Quaid. Oh, Valley of Dragons. Like, and that show also has a dragon that doesn't look particularly great. Like, it's so much is in common.
I think that dragon may have looked worse.
Yeah, like, I'm like, Netflix, you have so much money. Why does this dragon look so
bad? I don't
so
think,
bad?
I will state it right here for posterity. I think that dragon looks worse
than the dragon in Dragonheart. That 24 years later,
I will die on.
Fuck you.
Okay, Jay, slight spoiler for one episode of The Witcher. That dragon looked so bad that they had to invent a part of this world whereby dragons also take the form of humans. Because they were like, fuck it, we can only animate so much of it. He's just a human now.
Well, and that's
dragons
like,
can shapeshift. Deal with it.
I think that's one of the things that I do like respect the effects of this movie for. And like when you were talking about how Jurassic Park holds up.
Yeah.
Is that like Jurassic Park, a lot of puppets that are really good. And then most of the scenes where they have CG dinosaurs, or at least the T-Rex, where people are looking real close and it's just like one thing, it's in the dark.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And with Dragonheart, I think they do a pretty good job of, you don't get a lot of full body Draco. Mm-hmm. You don't get a lot of him interacting with stuff. And when he does, they did a great job of having like, you know, air rams under the water to make it react like he's there and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that idea of, I mean, not to the extent, but like the idea of the problems they had with Bruce and Jaws and like, okay, we have to figure out a way to work around this and it makes it better in the long run.
Yeah. Well, like, that's what I was going to say watching it. Like The one thing that I miss a lot, besides just like movies like these, because we don't get movies like these anymore. Like, if you're making a fantasy film these days, or even a fantasy television show, it either needs to be like we're playing it 120% seriously, and it is dark, and it is grim, and it is edgy, and we're doing The Witcher, or we're doing Game of Thrones, or Pillars of the Earth, or one of these kinds of things. Or it's like we're going to be really ironic and postmodern and sarcastic, and it's going to be a little more like a Marvel film, where it's like we're kind of winking and like,
we know that
the time heist doesn't make sense. Just don't ask about it. Time heist. And like, it doesn't matter because you're just in it. Movies like this that are just so earnest and just trying to like make a fun, like we talked about this a lot actually last week with, Viz, we did The Mask of Zorro, and we're talking about how it's like we don't get movies like this anymore that are fun, swashbuckling, like fantasy films or action adventure films anymore. Like,
yeah,
because they're either way more focused on the comedy, like a Jumanji kind of a deal, or they're way more focused on the grim seriousness, and you get a Game of Thrones. And so it's
or you
fun
get that like new Taron Egerton Robin Hood, you know?
Yeah, where it's like we need to reinvent the wheel. To, like, right. do, like, a new steampunk King Arthur or
right,
whatever.
You got your punk takes, you've got your way serious, or you get your, like, super meta comedy, but you don't have, like, that flash the smile swashbuckly where there can be a wink, but it's a very subtle wink. It's not aware that it's a movie. It's not,
exactly. Which I think is, like, when this, even when this movie falters, because it's not a perfect film, that charm and that earnestness carries so much weight.
You know what I think happened? I think is that, like, the earnest, like adventure story that, like, isn't super grim, I think, like, that became synonymous for a little bit. I think this is what happened with the young adult boom in movies, is I think that people tended to associate these adventure things with, like, a young adult type vibe. Because you see that a lot with, like, even these days, like, with, like, the Mortal Engines movies and, like, a lot of those. I think that, like, either...
I forgot that was a movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think you see a lot of these, like, big adventure films, like Hunger Games and stuff like that, where it's like, yeah, these are big adventure stories that take themselves very, like, seriously, but, like, they're very, like, adventure-based. But I think that people tend to think, like, oh, these are just for kids. Whereas a movie like Dragonheart, I think, is, like, for kids and adults. I think there became a more divide into, like, if you're an adult, you're going to these, like, super serious movies. And if you are, like, a young adult or a kid, you're going into these, like, super earnest but very cheesy avenues. And there didn't become much room in the middle for those two to meet at all in any type of earnest way. Because I think we became embarrassed of anything that is associated with kids. For a bit. And especially associated with young adults and teenagers, especially teenage women liked. Because I think a lot of the genres, like, switched towards more of, like, a female-based version of this. So it became associated with teenage girls, and then I think a lot of the audience became embarrassed of that association.
Interesting.
Which is where I think we saw, because I think that is around the time that we saw these types of movies go away. Is the time when, like, that type of movie became big.
Huh.
And we never really found our way back to it.
I could see that. I could buy that.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about how when Dennis Quaid encounters the dragon again, 12 years later, it takes him about an hour and 12 minutes to confirm that this is the same dragon that gave up half of his heart.
Oh, it's longer.
Sean Connery's got such a distinct voice.
It's like two or three days. Like, they are like two or three cons in.
Yeah.
And when he realizes that, he even brings it up at one point, like, oh shit, like, I guess that dragon's dead, the one that I was searching for, because I guess I killed all of them except for you.
Right.
And it can't be you.
It couldn't.
Right?
There's no way. But so the only way that makes me think is one of two things. Either Dennis Quaid has voice blindness. Very, you know, it ran rampant back then. Or every dragon sounds like Sean Connery, which I think is more likely in this world.
That is definitely the choice we should
make. I know which world I'd want to live in.
Even like the women. Even like the scarred one that's like apparently a lady, Sean Connery.
I have to get back to my brood. just like so silly, but also like would make sense.
Like it can't be the first one because like I there's no way you don't recognize that voice. Like it, yeah. If you had someone like a Timothy Dalton, then it's just like, oh, cool, like a resonant male, like older male voice. But like Sean Connery just has such a specific accent and right. vocal quality. It is impossible to mistake.
Well, I think like during that scene too, where they're having like that little campfire and they're talking about like, oh yeah, he must be dead already. I think the dragon even has like a scratch the back of the neck, like, oh yeah,
he really does.
Yes, all dragons know that story.
There's like something he knows about it that like he wouldn't have known. He's like, oh, how did you know that? And the dragon's like, but all the dragons know that story.
It's in all the dragon chat rooms.
We heard it on the wind. I love that about the dragon in this movie.
Group chat. All of the, we have a text thread.
It's the thing about the dragon that I love in this movie is, like you said, they don't try to hide it in the dark, and they don't like he is like pretty out in the open for a lot of it.
Yeah.
And you'd think like, oh, we don't know how far the effects have come, so we're gonna kind of like keep him pretty stationary. He is the most animated. Like, this dude is pulling face to the camera. He's like, scratching his back behind. He's like, oh boy, I've got to. Like, he's doing full Charlie Chaplin routines when he dives face first into the water that's not deep enough. Like,
oh, yes.
Crosses his eyes at one point. It's like, pull my tail, and he farts fire. I don't know. Like, crazy shit happens in this movie.
So, basically, what has happened through this part of the movie that we've already kind of talked about is that. Dennis Quaid and the dragon, Draco, they kind of form an alliance whereby, Dennis Quaid will not attempt to murder him if Draco will kind of go along with this con that Dennis Quaid, because there are no more dragons and he's not going to be able to make any more money off of killing dragons, he goes to towns where that Draco terrorizes for like a day and offers to kill him, to slay the dragon. And then when he does, they just have this great bit that they do where he shoots him with like a huge crossbow and Draco just catches it in midair and pretends to get murdered.
Yeah, legit just like places it there like he's in the worst high school production of Romeo and Juliet.
And he's so dramatic. And then he like falls into the water and does a like perfect dive, like Olympic style dive in, because he just can't avoid like being dramatic and doing it right. I like how persnickety he is as a dragon. Like, there's something that, like, makes me...
You don't fuck with my process, Bowen!
Like, I love how persnickety and, like, crotchety he is. Like, there's something that I that tickles me so much.
If I don't get in a full link later warm-up, I'm yeah. not going on today.
Like, when he tells him to, like, eat someone, he's like, oh, I don't eat people. They taste terrible.
Oh, he's got that great line, I chewed in self-defense.
I chewed in self-defense.
But
I
didn't
swallow.
Dragons never swallow.
Yeah.
I like the part where he's just like, Dennis Quaid's having trouble lighting a fire, and he's just like, fuck you. He uses one nostril, just like, like roast his fucking dinner alive.
Yeah, there are so many. This dragon's dishing out yuck yucks like every two lines. He's just, I hope you like your meat well done. Somebody wants. And it's straight up like he's camping with Shrek.
Oh, shit. This movie could have done with a musical number. I would have loved that. I love the dragon. I love him. I love Draco. I love him so much.
So I do have a note here that essentially my whole theory...
I don't accept any notes. This movie is perfect. No. I love it so much. I don't want to hear your notes. I just want to watch it again. I want to play the game. I want to watch it again. I don't want your notes. Get out of here.
It's not a bad note. It's just a thought. I think that you could make an argument that the entire second act of this movie... where Bowen and Draco are going town to town performing these little ruses to clean the towns out of money.
Genius.
Is that this is a giant love letter to theater. It's aww. This is what like theater troupes used to do. They used to come into town, they would stage really big theatrical things to get people's attention. Sometimes it'd be like, there's a murderer come to town, and you know, one of the actors plays like, you know,
is that how the theater troops do? There's a murderer in town.
Yeah, I think it's anytime someone claims that somebody's been murdered, I'm like, oh, this theater troops back again.
It's been a murder.
Yeah, it's just another one of those like college competitions.
Oh man, I would love an immersive theater party. Someone throw this for me right now. where it's a murder mystery, and it's just, like, that a dragon's terrorizing your town. That's it. And you just have to find, like, someone to kill the dragon. I don't know. I think that's just a Ren Faire. I think I'm talking
about
Ren Faire.
Yeah, you're just talking about a Ren Faire.
I think I just miss the world so much that I'm just talking myself into wanting things that already exist in normal times. That's where we're at. I forgot what side of the road that cars drive on the other day and had an entire crisis. That's where I'm at. Ren Faires are great. That's my point. All right.
All right.
Next note. Go.
Jay, what do you think about this plan to go from town to town and stage these little shows for people?
I love it as a concept in the movie, and there's a like there's a part of me like I went back
and
forth.
I don't like it.
Well, it stuck the landing. I'll tell you that now.
Great.
In my mind, because there was a part of me that was getting a little confused by that bit about which like I wouldn't have as a kid. I wouldn't have questioned it, but like being like, where are we going with this? Because like they'd be doing their fun hijinks, then we cut back to the prince, now king, just being awful,
like almost raping someone, like
yeah.
Right, like real shit is happening on the
yeah.
other side
yeah.
of this movie.
So like tonality gets a little weird.
Yeah,
we're making a lot of 180s.
You gotta buy into this buddy relationship, though. You gotta buy into it. They become best friends, and we needed to see that happen. I truly it's another one of my favorite things, one of my favorite tropes. I adore it. I adore, like, that's why I love what I like about Road to El Dorado. I like people being friends through being con artists. Like, it tickles me.
Yeah,
so that to me, that's like I totally agree, and that's where I guess I wish like the structure would have been slightly different, so that we either had less of the beginning or since the prince is pretty one-dimensional anyway, just like less of him in the middle and more of that bonding process, and then something
yeah.
else to bring them back to, like, okay, now we got to face the
yeah,
prince.
You're right. Yeah,
because I wanted,
because right.
I loved that bit. I loved all that section, and I wanted to see it go to more places and like a bigger montage of like different ways they pull it off and different
yeah.
problems they have with it. Want to see all of that. But then the movie's like 3 hours, so.
Yeah,
because yeah, that's my takeaway from the movie is I'm like, this movie on its own merits, solid B. If this movie had been 2 hours of fake dragon heists, A+.
if instead of Dragonheart, it was just dragon heist.
It was dragon heist.
Yes.
Same effects, same everything. Dragon heist. Yeah, because
that sequel, come on, we've got 5 but no dragon heist.
Because that's when I would say, like, thank god this movie is still peppered with like amazing actors. It's like at one
yeah.
point he's like, he goes to a town, Dennis Quaid goes to a town that he's gonna free from the dragon, even though it's all a ruse, and it's, you know, it's their matinee, and the Lord Fenton shows up, who's played by Jason Isaacs.
Baby Jason Isaacs.
Oh. Yeah, young Jason Isaacs, who comes in and is just like, he serves the king and doesn't like Bowen. And essentially Bowen is like, had been completely disgraced at this point.
Right.
Because he doesn't follow the king anymore. Which makes me wonder why he hasn't been like sought after to be killed. How come no one's tried to kill Bowen yet?
Because they need someone to kill the dragons.
But at this point, like, are they just kind of like, oh, well, he's off killing dragons. Like, he's not bothering us. Like he's still
think...
going around being, like, decrying the word, like, saying that the king is wrong and all this other stuff. He's still committing treason.
Yeah, but he's killing some
yeah.
dragons, so.
They never get into, which is good because it'd be a lot of extra minutia. But, like, they don't get into, like, the size of the world. But I get the feeling that, like, Aenon's a king. But this
yeah.
is, like, before Britain. This is he's one of the Anglo-Saxon kings. This
yeah.
is before the Norman invasion. Like
yeah.
a kingdom is like
the size
what
of Ridley
would be
Park.
A duchy later. Yeah.
yeah.
So he's
yeah.
like he's the king of like a corner of the kingdom. So Bowen can like go where he needs to. And
yeah, I get the sense that Bowen's been away and he hasn't really been like in the kingdom.
It's like, I'm not in your lawn. I'm not in your lawn. Fuck you.
Yeah, I think it's basically just like the understanding of like, oh yeah, Bowen, who like basically just dramatically quit 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And then just now, like, talks shit to his about his boss on social media, and they're just like, whatever, like, it doesn't matter, he's not gonna
God
do anything.
Damn it, this guy's acting up again.
He's just obsessed with, he's just like a weird dragon obsessed dude, just let him do like whatever he's gonna do, you know. Yeah.
He's what we all, like, hoped Sean Spicer would have done, but he didn't.
It's like, I'm, and again, it's one of those things where, like, I'm glad the movie didn't go this way, because it would have been too much for what it was, but there's a part of me that was just like, also like, oh, like, you know, like, because he openly defies the prince and then he runs off. Mm-hmm. And, like, the prince doesn't seem to hound him and chase after him much. And maybe it's because, like, there's still a little bit of, like, a bond there, so he doesn't want to.
Well, he still
and, like, it could have been explored more to make him deeper, but I'm kind of glad they didn't still, too.
I'm fine with it.
Well, he still thinks that Aynan is, like, not actually a bad person. So I think for Bowen, it's
a big deal.
I'm
saying
like,
on Aynan's part, not
like,
chasing
him down.
Let's
kill the king. I think he's, like, in his mind, he is trying to save the king.
Well, I'll say, like, for Dennis Quaid, like, I think his best stuff is towards the end where he's, like, having to face Aynan.
Yeah.
And, like, the betrayal that he feels.
Yep.
Because, like, I think it's, like, maybe when he, like, he has, like, a duel with him and it gets the better of him. Mm-hmm. And, but then they get back into yelling at each other. But he's got, like, a good broken down, like, he's not, like, being tough or heroic or manly. It is just a broken down, like, he's not, like, one of those hyper-masculine tropes. He is just like a guy that hurts.
Yeah, like,
and
all
I think
of
he
his,
does
like,
that
all
well.
All of his worldview kind of like crashes down when he fights him, and he realizes, like, oh no, he always sucked. Like,
yep.
He also broke his fingy during that fight.
Oh wow.
Dennis Quaid did.
Damn.
Oh.
Broke his finger during the fight with Thewlis, because Thewlis is thwacking at him. He's got no, like, whereas Dennis Quaid, like, actually, like, took a lot of time and trained and really wanted to, like, look good and verse for the sword. I feel like David Thewlis was like, I don't want to touch a sword until the day of filming. Which I think works for the character beautifully. Like,
he doesn't need to be skilled. He's got a dragon heart. Like, he basically just lucks his way through it.
Yeah, well, that's what I love also. There's a little bit of, like, a Macbeth factor to it. He thinks he's living a charmed life. He's like, I'm someone who's known my entire life, pretty much, that I have half of a dragon heart in me. I am pretty much immortal. I'm blessed. No one's going to stop me from doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, to me it makes sense that he would become like a sociopathic brat. Like, it's a like, that move tracks so well.
It's like that moment in a game where you can like do a quick save and then you're like, I can do whatever I want now, and then just go back and load it because there's no consequences.
Yeah. Exactly. It's that is, you just described every time that I play Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. So at this point they go to a town, they get caught up again with Merida from Brave. She's, like, outing them in this town. She's like, guys, this is all a ruse. They're theater actors. This was their matinee.
Yeah, because
which she found out because a previous town offered her as a sacrifice to the dragon.
Yo.
Yeah, because Dennis Quaid's trying to call their bluff and be like, oh, if you won't pay me, then I guess I'll accept a human sacrifice. You wouldn't want that. And they're like, actually, we don't like this girl.
Actually, so much cheaper. Like,
actually, that's a deal because we do not like her.
She sucks.
She really sucks. And plus, she's like definitely the hottest lady here, and it's making all of the other women feel bad. Like, my triplets that are randomly a thing in this, like, feel really, really insecure.
Yeah, that was wild.
Just those random shot of those triplets. Like, what was that about? Like,
and twins.
it's such a strange thing. But yeah, so she gets offered as a sacrifice. Dennis Quaid's like, you can eat her, I don't care. And the dragon basically like takes her away to a nice little riverbank and basically like hits on
like
her.
Seduces this girl.
So like that part right there, I have to believe, like, because this early they I don't think they have facial motion tracking like they use for Marvel films now and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I am sure they took pictures or film of Sean Connery in the booth and use that to help the dragon. And I think the mixture of his face and everybody knows that James Bond Connery voice, they're like, okay, he's just, these lines are going to have to be, he's hitting on her. There's just, no one's going to believe that
there's
not.
There's no way it's not going to play as that.
Exactly. Well,
so we're just
going to
lean into it.
They took over 200 photos of Sean Connery recording the voice.
Oh.
And, they used that as reference when they were making, Draco.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah. But what you're describing is totally accurate because it sounds like he's hitting on her super hard.
Like, oh, I was distracted.
Yes, excuse me, this pretty lady showed up and tried to get under my scales. Like, so then...
Like, it's either that or Draco is gay and is just like, oh my god, finally a sophisticated friend. Like, finally some fucking class up in this joint. It is constantly barbarians. I can talk to someone about the
spider things.
Yeah, yeah. Like, truly, it's like, I feel like he's what if he was a human, he'd
I've been
be like,
trying
oh.
to find someone to talk about Downton Abbey with
yeah,
for years.
Like, all of these smelly men keep coming into my cave to try to fucking murder me, and I just want to, like, sit down and have tea and, like, talk about Charles Dickens. Like, I really just want to have a book club with someone. Like, I feel like that's kind of, like, that's the only other vibe that I could buy in that scene. If he's like, oh my god, fucking finally.
Where have you been all my life?
And that's how I choose to believe it. That's how I choose to believe that scene went, because otherwise it's horrifying.
So now she's with the group. We end up meeting back up with Brother Gilbert. At this point, they're making enough money they can employ these two as other actors in their ruse.
Yeah. No one believes her because she's a woman. She's mad because they won't help her take down the king. They're just in it for themselves for the con. So she's like, all right, well, I'm going to fuck up your life.
Yeah.
And comes running in to tell everyone, like, he and the dragon are in it together. And
they're in cahoots.
I'm sure you can assume, like, that it doesn't go over super well. This town is apparently cannibals.
Yeah, they try to, when they shoot down the dragon falls into the lake, as has been rehearsed the entire time.
But the lake is not deep enough for him to sink in and then, like, swim away.
So
Kyle drives himself, paralyzed for life.
Truly, yeah. Like, he wrecks himself.
This movie, like, I bet the conversation had to arise of, like, what if we just put, like, six little birds, like, flying in a circle around his head? Like, wouldn't that be kind of cute? Like, and they're like, no, it's not Shrek. And so they end up, like, the people are like, oh, sweet, we're going to eat the fuck out of this dragon.
They just start yelling, meat!
And then...
they become a zombie horde.
Yeah, Dennis Quaid and them are like, no, you can't eat the dragon.
And then Draco's like, I'm out, bitches!
Yeah, Draco's like, fuck you guys, I'm gone. And then they turn on Dennis Quaid and they're like, all right, we're going to eat you, I guess. Like, and he's like, I shouldn't have taken that understudy gig.
Anyway, Draco saves them.
Draco saves them. They all go off. And essentially, we're in the end game of the movie. We're about to hit this big final battle.
Dennis Quaid finally realizes that Draco is the dragon and that it's not his fault that Aenon is the way that he is. He goes
Turns
to...
out Aenon just sucks. The worst.
Some people just suck. And then he goes to King Arthur's realm and like
they go to Avalon, yeah.
They go to Avalon.
That's
so cool.
Yeah. He takes the vow again of being a knight.
The old oath.
Yeah. And then suddenly they are in it. We're in the end game. We are winning over
the
villagers.
Like that pseudo hug where like Draco comes back in the rain and just sort of like puts the wing over him.
Oh, yeah. The real How to Train Your Dragon moment.
Love
like,
it.
There are a lot of moments of this film that like that feel like, oh shit, this really was like a early draft of like How to Train Your Dragon.
Well, the mom, so the queen, hires these dragon hunters
right.
to try and kill.
At which point I went, other dragon hunters? I pretty much thought Dennis Quaid was the only one doing that
but
job.
But these other dragon hunters look exactly like every character from How to Train Your Dragon.
They're all Vikings. They all look exactly like characters from How to Train Your
Dragon. Yeah, they're all dressed like Scandinavian
and what's
Vikings.
What's really funny is that in one of the sequels you can watch the trailer for of the Dragonheart movie, I think it's the 2017 one, the main character is literally dressed like Hiccup.
Yeah.
Like he is designed exactly to look like Hiccup from How to Train Your Dragon.
So then, yeah, so we're in this final battle. And
we do get a sick shot where they're like, oh, what backup do you possibly have, Dennis Quaid? And then, like, the dragon
comes up in the sunset? Fuck yeah, that's awesome.
Yes! It looks
and
so
music swells.
Cool.
And it's like, there's so many times in movies where you're like, that's a cool visual. But come on. But with these two characters, you know they planned it out.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
On the walkover, he's like, all right, you're going to wait till I crest this hill and then just streak through. It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. Trust me. You're going to, like, wait for the sunset. Pick your moment. fucking do it, dude.
Draco's like, hire a professional, get a professional. I don't know what you want from me.
I've been waiting for this moment.
Don't tell me
life.
How to hit my mark. I know my mark. Like, and then they, so we're getting to this final battle. What's great about this is Thulis is kind of like, he really is kind of going King like full on Joffrey in this mode where he's like, I have no plan.
Joffrey learned from Aenon. Like,
like he's like, I'm just going to kind of hit whatever's in front of me. And, but we get the...
Fight choreography? What fight choreography? Oh.
Yeah, we get the confirmation. Bowen sees the confirmation that when Aenon gets hurt, so does Draco.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah.
And then Aenon figures out, oh, that's why my mom hired those dragon hunters, because she wants me dead. Yeah. So, get fucked, moms. Which is a tough look for the queen.
Yeah, this is all after that amazing battle in the forest. Where,
love that battle.
That battle's so cool.
Yeah, where,
which, that battle, like, it was something else that I had to look up after the movie. I was like, all right, wait a minute, when did Braveheart come out?
Yeah.
95. Year before.
So, I was looking at it, I was like, all right, because in this one battle in Dragonheart, they do three battles in Braveheart. They've got the Pike Wall, they've got the Feigned Retreat, and they've got the Fire Arrows Hidden Tar Pit Surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they just do all of that in one.
Yeah, it was like, fuck,
oh, all right, nice.
And I like that she, like, Merida genuinely gets to, like, fight. Like, she gets, like,
Axe wielding.
She's a double axe wielding, and she fucking murders dudes. It's awesome.
It is. It's a really good fight for her. Like, she really
great
does
fight for
it.
Her. I think, and like talking about the battles in general, I thought, like, most of the fights throughout this I enjoyed. I like how they give Bowen a kind of a special look, especially when he's got the two swords and he's holding them two different ways.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's trained a different way because he's a master at arms, but he's also a dragon hunter, so he's got to have different skills. I can get behind that.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, like, watching the fights, they're, like, throughout, in even the big sequences, you can see a lot of fight logic where it's just, like, it's telling a story of where we're going. We understand, like, the objects of these attacks and everything. And I think, like, my only, like, quasi-critique to it is that, like, and there's a lot of movies from this era that suffer from it, too. And I think it was just at the time, you know, TVs weren't as sharp and everything on the film screen's got a little bit of a haze over it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, so you could fudge a little bit of the action. Is there's a little bit of you go, I go. You go, I go.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of dead space between the moves. And if you're looking for it, you can kind of see it. But otherwise, like the fight logic, though, very sound.
We felt that way, which is weird, because on our Fast and Furious episode, previous Rob Cohen film, that also had, there's a weird amount of, like, where you kind of feel like things should have been edited, like, a second earlier. Like, it's like the shot lingers just a little too long, or it's like, what you're doing, the stunt is impressive, but it never doesn't look like a stunt.
Yeah. It looks very rehearsed.
Yeah.
And, like, I appreciate that because you can tell they were being safe and everything, especially because, like, so many of those fights are, like, one person's on on horseback, and, like, there's, like...
Yeah.
There's a reason that people these days do more editing tricks with stuff like that. It is more temperamental so that you can hide that stuff. So one of the trade-offs you do have by going to the wide shot is that, like, especially when it's, like, a shot where there are four different pairs that are fighting, is that, like, it's going to be hard to get a shot where all of them are going, like, and not having any of that. And, like, and getting that timed up so you can get a cut where you hide everything that needs to be hidden, you know?
Well, I think, like, speaking of the edit in particular, like, that again is, I think, a very, like, east and west kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is if you look at a lot of, like, you know, top Jackie Chan versus like modern Marvel fights, not only is, like, the way they're shot different, but the editing, like, you see a lot of Chan stuff, you've got, like, a medium or a wide shot of the action, and then, like, the important blows, like, not the quick combos, but the ones that matter, there'll be a second close-up shot of it landing where they've got the time to do it just right and they can set it up the way they want and take it the right way.
Yeah.
It's sort of like in the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock when he's doing the pit fight.
Yeah.
Like, that guy getting hit in the face is really getting hit in the face because that's how you're getting the skin ripples. But they've prepped it, they've worked on it, and you can pull your punch a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that same sort of thing versus, like, some of the modern Marvel fights, like, where the impact is supposed to be, there's the initial cut, and then it moves on in the fight without highlighting it in a second one. So it takes a lot of the blow out of the fight.
Huh. Interesting.
Do you think that that's to level all of the hits because they're hitting so much more? Like, you can just do more with editing and with special effects and also, like, speeding up film and stuff like that. So with the Marvel fights,
right?
They're probably actually getting hit more times in those. So it's like, well, each of the hits carries less weight. Because you get something like a Jackie Chan movie or like Tiger Cop or something like that, like one of these early ones. And it's like, you know, just essentially it's just a mid shot of him scaling a building and then fighting two guards. But he, you know, is able to take them down in like seven moves. Because it's more about the choreography of that whole scene as opposed to just kind of like, you know, Black Widow versus whomever. Kind of a thing.
Yeah, you've got like your big sequence moments versus like pivotal character fights.
Yeah.
And like what you're emphasizing. And I think and I love the Marvel movies. I'm not like digging on them at all. I'm just pointing out a difference in style. But like I think part of the trick for them too is that what makes a lot of Jackie Chan good is like most of those big fight moments, he's always vulnerable. He plays a lot of pain. And that's very hard in a superhero film when you've got people that are like encased in metal or are giant hulks or are cosmically powered. And it's like they're going to get hit a ton, but what does it actually equal out for them?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So there's a lot of dynamic to play with.
Yeah. Well, we get into this final battle between David Thewlis and Dennis Quaid. And again, like we've said, I always like just really appreciate it when they take the time to show experience versus non-experience in fighters. Mm. One of my favorite modern examples of this is like you watch the way John Boyega fights Adam Driver in The Force Awakens, and it's sure. like yeah. someone who has never fought with a sword of any kind, and so he's just kind of like whacking, and you're just watching Driver be able to parry.
Same with Daisy
so
Ridley
yeah,
that, where it's like, you know, she's got like instinct, but she's essentially just like hitting it.
Yeah, you're watching her learn how to fight in real time.
And I like those moments of like just barely getting the sword up in time to block, like particularly like inexperienced fighters blocking.
Yeah,
I think it's always really interesting. Is just like that there's no finesse or like thinking about it looking good. It's just like get your fucking sword up in time.
Right. Yeah. It's not a parry. It's a reflex.
Yeah. And so I think also like some of the clunkiness in this works because I think we're not as used to these days seeing fights with broadswords, particularly like people fighting with broadswords with armor on.
Yeah.
And so I think there is an element of like, it may feel like a bit of my turn, your turn, because there is like every time you do have to like gear yourself up for a blow, you kind of have to like regroup yourself for the next attack.
Yeah.
There is like a clunkiness to it that I kind of appreciate. And also given a lot of these villagers that they're fighting don't have any fight experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, they get the briefest of montages before the battle starts.
Yeah, but that's you know, that's
like where you put All-Star.
Yeah. That's like maybe they've got like an hour and a half, you know?
Yeah.
But nevertheless, Thewlis persists and he makes it.
Yeah, they end up retreating to the castle and they have to break into the castle because they have taken Draco hostage. They have to go back and get the dragon.
Yeah. And
he
at
has
this
to go
point,
get his bestie.
The mom, the queen, I don't know why I keep calling her the mom, the queen gets into a nice conversation with Draco where he's pretty much like, yo, cool, kill me. You kill me, your son will be dead, all this will be over.
Yeah, he's a really nice moment of like, are the stars out right now? Because he's like, preparing himself to die.
Tell me
like,
about the stars, which is nice.
And he really, because he really just wants to like join the rest of his people up to the stars.
He wants to be Dragon a constellation.
Hella. Yeah. And so, but she has stopped at the last second because she didn't check behind her. by David Thewlis.
I bet he sneaks up on people a lot. He's got that energy.
He's a sneaky boy. Just look at him.
Look at him.
Yeah. And then he murders his mom.
Oh.
Off screen.
Yeah.
But he kills her.
But only just off. Very menacing following.
It's actually a very effective shot and pretty dark for like a sensibly like family film. She like walks off and then like it's this darkened doorway and she disappears into the shadows of the doorway and then he just sort of like stands behind and then slowly just follows her out and you just hear her scream.
Yeah.
It's pretty
and
intense.
Just prior, he's got that, what is it, that line was, that's not very motherly of you.
Oh, great line.
Yeah, because he knows. Yeah, because he knows about the dragon hunters and
what he essentially can be immortal if they keep Draco prisoner.
Yeah.
Right. If they can lock him up somewhere, he'll live forever.
He will live essentially forever. Because if a dragon It basically, like, I'm trying to remember, like, am I thinking of Aragorn rules? But, like, if he can't die, if unless the dragon dies, but I don't know, like, it's...
Yeah, no, it's Harry Potter rules as well.
He's immortal, but, like, it's not a rule where, like, the dragon dies if he dies, and he dies, the dragon dies. It's only one way. It's only really a one-way thing.
Yeah, it's like, if the dragon dies, then he dies.
Yeah, it's not, like, if he dies, then the dragon keeps him alive.
Because when Quaid...
The dragon is giving a gift.
Oh, yes, that's right, because the life force half is with the dragon. That's what he said.
So, he comes, Bowen comes in to save his best friend, and... At this point, he's like, you know what you got to do. You've got to kill me. You got to be the one to kill me. And know, and Dennis Quaid's like, no, I'm not going to kill you. You're my best friend now.
I think Dennis Quaid does a really
You're my
good
business
job.
Partner. Yeah, at this point, I'm like.
I actually really bought into this relationship.
I buy into Quaid now.
Mm-hmm. It's when, at the it's end when you're is trying, where he shines.
It's when you're trying to sell him to me as like Tim Roth and Rob Roy that I'm just like, no, it's fucking The Rookie. What are you talking about? This is Dennis Quaid.
No, but I love, I really like him as just like, no, like I really believe that he loves his like CGI dragon friend. Like I really do.
It becomes like, again, going back to like the code and like the American sort of like feel that he brings. Because this is like if Homeward Bound met Old Yeller. Like if he had been able to talk to his dog the whole time and now has to kill him.
People love dogs. Me. It really got me. And he's trying to, and like, they're, you know, there's like that great moment where he's like, okay, well, if you won't kill me, then I'm going to attack you and you're going to just have to defend yourself. And he just stands there and like,
lets him breathe fire on him
because he knows that he won't hurt him.
Yeah.
And it's just like a really sweet moment. I also think it's a really sweet detail. He has this shield that he's had the entire movie that has like the fangs of dragons that he's killed in past encounters, because he mentions it earlier, and then like for the last battle he's obviously like taken all of them off and like is just fighting with a plain shield because he's a friend to dragons now, even though he eradicated their entire race.
So then when David Thewlis comes up, he delivers the final death knell.
He has to choose between fighting David Thewlis or killing his friend, and to do one he has to do the other. Like he does it, he throws the axe and kills him.
He kills Draco. As Draco dies, so does David Thewlis.
He's finally at peace.
And he's finally at peace, and he finally becomes a constellation in the stars.
And it's really fucking sweet, yo.
It's really beautiful. The other thing I appreciate so much about this movie, and about movies before, I was telling Lauren this, like, for some reason, we forgot about this, like, 5 years ago. Maybe 10 years ago we forgot about this when we were making movies. That once your plot is done, you can just... end.
Oh,
like,
yeah, Peter Jackson ruined that for everyone.
Yeah, and I love him, but it's like I still feel like
that's
it's,
the price that we paid. That's yeah, the price in
blood. It was
the
price that I paid happily.
Yeah, but it's like we defeat Thanos, and then we've still got 25 minutes of the movie. Like, you know, it's right. One of those things where I was like expecting, like, okay, well now we have to see, well, where is Bowen going? Now we have to see Bowen and Ken and Merida getting together and all this other, and it's just like, nope, once the dragon's dead, that's the movie. Bye. Like, I'm like, oh my god, what just an amazing
done.
I had a reservation to get like, to. Great.
There's like a voiceover that's like, and everything was chill forever. The end. Bye.
Here's five more. Movies. And that's Dragonheart. That's how this movie ends. As we said, there are five movies in the Dragonheart legacy. There's a direct,
still getting my head around that.
There's a direct sequel called Dragonheart: A New Beginning. Trying to pull up all the names of the different Dragonheart.
And that
films.
Dragon looks truly like,
oh, it's bad. Awful.
That looks like it was made in like MS Paint. Like,
do you remember a movie that came out like 15 years ago, and I feel like you would, the Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within?
Oh, yeah.
It looks like the dragon looks like the main girl from that movie.
Well, it's weird because it looks like a baby dragon.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a baby.
But it has the voice of a fully grown man.
Yeah.
So it is very odd.
So we've got that movie. That's supposed to be a sequel to this.
Because that one's name is like
Drake.
Drake. Not Draco, Drake.
Then this is where it gets confusing. They do the first prequel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no.
But the prequel is called Dragonheart 3. The Sorcerer's Curse.
I don't think we watched the trailer for that one.
No.
But I assume it's another name that sounds like Draco. I assume it's like Draka.
His name is Drago.
This is Drago? Okay,
this is Drago.
So Drago.
I must burn you. You will lose.
Yeah.
Drago is played by Ben Kingsley. Then you get to the sequel to The Sorcerer's Curse. This is still before Dragonheart. Mm-hmm. And this one's called Dragonheart Battle for the Heartfire.
We watched the trailer for this one. That one's also Drago.
This one's also Drago, but now in this one, Drago is voiced by Patrick Stewart.
So they but it is the same Drago.
Same Drago.
And I believe in this one we are, this one, by judging by the trailer, we are left with the impression that now, or back then, I guess, humans could have a dragon heart as like a little pendant, and they could use that to have like the power of fire.
Mm-hmm.
I guess David Thewlis really got fucked in that equation. He didn't he didn't get to do shit.
And the most recent one that came out in February of 2020.
We finally got a lady dragon.
It's called Dragonheart Vengeance, and it's about an ice dragon who is voiced by Helena Bonham Carter.
So this has just got to be like a club for English actors, mm-hmm. right?
Pretty much.
Like they but all like, drink in like one cool pub.
Like, what? Like, it's such a weird thing. I can't imagine the budgets for these movies are that big. It's like, hey, Helena, do you want to make, like, a quick, like, $40,000, $50,000 come in today and film a bunch of, like, gobbledygook nonsense about you saying, like, you've got the heart power or, like, whatever? Like,
this is, it's a secret society. This is, like, when you screw up in the Illuminati, they make you do a Dragonheart movie.
Exactly. ISIS funds the Dragonheart movies. Like, and so that's the third of the prequel trilogy. So now we're caught up to Dragonheart. All of them have had different directors. That's
and all
pretty
of
much...
those dragons in the prequels murdered by Dennis Quaid.
Yep.
Just remember that, y'all. Oh. Just remember that. He did that.
But the
he is Dragon Hitler. See... He did that.
That was most
our
of
our hero. Is this your king?
Most of the facts that I could find. Do we want to guess the budget of Dragonheart
In
1996?
What's like a lot in 1996?
Well, I don't.
What was Iron Man?
Iron Man was $140 million in 2008.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to say.
Because it's a big studio, a lot of big names.
Universal, big names. For at this time. These effect like this movie was nominated for best visual effects at the Oscars.
Like, gotcha. Okay.
70 million. 70 million.
Okay. Jay.
Okay. Like I yeah, inflation and stuff, numbers in general, I'm pretty poor with. But I will say. You said 70 million.
I said 70.
Okay, I'm going to Price is Right this and say 69 million.
Oh, 69.
The 69s have it.
Damn it!
Yes!
$57 million.
Oh.
So still pretty, like,
you
at
bastard.
That time, adjusted for inflation, it's about a $98 million budget today, which is a lot.
Wow. That's a big deal.
It's a $100 million movie. Like, you could not get an original IP, like, fantasy film like this, you know, shot for $100 million today.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be attached to some sort of pre-existing novel or video game or something. Yeah. And then,
right.
Or it would have to have a huge name.
Yeah, and went on to gross $115 million worldwide.
Oh,
we didn't play
that game?
No,
we
didn't.
We're not playing that game?
Oh, sorry.
Fuck me, I guess. Right.
on a $57 million budget.
I would have won that one. I was ready to... I was just like, double. Whatever it is, double.
Yep,
doubled. What about domestic? Do you know domestic? We could play
I
that
I do know
still.
Domestic, yeah. How much do you think this movie made domestically?
So it made internationally.
Internationally, it made $115 million. So domestically, how much do you think this made?
I think this did really well overseas, so I'm gonna guess $60 million.
$60 million domestic.
$60 million domestic.
Jay,
I'm gonna let it ride. 69.
Oof, 60. You're closer.
Yeah.
It made 51. 51 in the States.
Eat it, Jay.
Ooh.
Yeah. So much more popular overseas. Great. That's pretty much all the facts I have for this. Was there anything that you wanted that we didn't hit that you wanted to hit?
Oh, I mean, I think. Oh, so yeah, we talked about the fight stuff. I enjoyed that immensely. Yeah, I really like the fights in this.
Yeah, I think the fights are great.
I can't get over the wig.
Yeah, the wig.
One more time, the wig is truly atrocious.
Oh, so yeah, so
many
that,
questions.
That's what I was going to bring up. The wig, all the scenes with the wig, especially. Well, I mean, she was wearing a wig the whole time, but those were all reshoots because they felt like the script they were using initially was the script that was partially written by the guy who wrote the novel, where David Thewlis's character was a little bit more reserved. So they wanted to add all of these scenes where he could be more evil.
Gotcha.
And a lot of that was like, well, we can be evil to this girl.
Yeah.
I hate that trope.
Well, the in the book,
after she climbs in the window of the banquet and just tries to run at him from the
she
window.
She dives in the window, just jumps in and was like, all right, I guess I'll stab him.
that's your plan? All
didn't
right,
really think
like,
this one
you
through.
Know, like, A plus for, like, bravery, I guess, but, like, D minus for planning.
The book goes full Game of Thrones on this shit. That scene where he has her in the room, he, like, does, like, assault her sexually in the
great
book. And, okay, like,
cool.
Yeah, so it's, like, the book
cool
tries to, like, really darken this shit.
Oh, cool. Ugh.
While, like, the fucking Punch and Judy show is happening throughout the countryside, right, with this dragon and like, would-be knight.
I hate
God,
men.
Yeah, they'd kept that. That'd have been really hard to get through.
Right? Yeah. Still PG-13. great. Jay, in 2020, do you recommend Dragonheart?
Most definitely.
Yeah?
It is, if you're gonna, if you are like me, and you're hanging out with buddies you haven't seen in a while, and you're like, you know what, you wanna have some drinks and watch a movie? This is that movie.
Fuck yeah.
There's plenty to enjoy from, like, a movie, you know, cinematic angle, and there's also plenty to laugh at, and it'll still have some feels and a good score you'll have in the back of your head. Most definitely recommend.
Absolutely. Lauren, I think I know the answer to this for
you. Absolutely, yes. This movie is great. I had a great time. You'll love it.
Yeah, I recommend it as well. I don't think they make them like this anymore. And it's weird to say that about a movie that only came out like 24 years ago.
Yeah. But that, like, was one thing. I feel like they were learning from the movies before them. Because I like that just with the accents, they're like, nah, we're not gonna Costner this or Slater this. Just be you, Quaid.
Just do it. Just do it. I do appreciate a little bit of how this movie, like, the dragon in this movie still looks better than Jar Jar Binks. Like,
definitely.
Like, you look at him dead on and it's just kind of like, that scares me. And that look like a Shrek, but at the same time, it looks better than Jar Jar. Cool. All right, across the board recommends. Now, like we always do at this time, we like to recommend a modern analog for Dragonheart. Considering none of the three of us have seen any of these sequels or prequels,
right,
you can have at those. They're all on Netflix right now.
Dope.
But Jay, do you have a modern analog for Dragonheart?
Ooh, a modern analog for Dragonheart. Modern, good, raucousy adventure with some charm and heart. Now this might be a little controversial. People got strong feelings about it either way. But I really like Pacific Rim.
Great.
Yes, I love Pacific Rim.
I was actually thinking a lot about Pacific Rim as like a close, like, kind of like in lineage. This definitely falls in the line. Sorry to interrupt. Continue.
Well, I think, but yeah, like in lineage, that feel where it is. I mean, it's a, you know, the premise is, you know, that one was, you know, fantasy. This one is science fiction fantasy. But they're playing it pretty straight, but still with a good wink and a nod. There's still comedy in there without it being too meta.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got, you know, I think some of the same complaints, like that one, like, they're like, oh, there's so much time with the people, not enough time with monsters and robots fighting. But I think when you get it, it's good. It's enjoyable.
Do you know what fixes that problem? Pacific Rim 2.
Oh, so I didn't see Pacific Rim 2 because I liked 1 so much and everybody complained about 2. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do it.
No, watch it. It's a great time.
A controversial statement from me, I enjoy the second one more.
See, that's what I need to hear. I need somebody I trust giving their opinion. Okay.
Scott Eastwood is trash.
He's awful.
Everything else is great.
But John Boyega is a charisma machine and it's a lot of fun.
Plus, like, Charlie Day. Yeah. He's great. Like, you get more Charlie of the two Day. Little scientists, and
there's
my
a lot
anyway.
More Charlie Day. It's great.
I love the two little fantastic. Scientists. They're my favorite part of the Pacific Rim movies, and you get more of them, and that's really all I need.
Lauren, what about you? Modern analog.
So I was thinking of where you can find these days, or at least in my recent memory, where I could find this type of kind of earnestness and action adventure. And for me, a lot of my like ones tend to be TV, specifically British TV. So I wanted to recommend a show that has all of that, is an adventure show, also is semi-based on Arthurian legend, and also has a famous British actor playing a dragon. So I would like to recommend a TV series called Merlin that ran from 2008 to 2012 that has John Hurt playing a dragon. That looks about, like, with a TV budget, looks about as good as Dragonheart. I will say, he is also a sassy as fuck dragon. He's a little piece of shit, and I love
he's
him.
He's a stinker.
He's a little stinker. He is constantly up to some shenanigans and giving, like, bullshit advice to the main character. I love him so much. And it's also just, like, a very earnest, fun show that has some really, really great, actors that have gone on to be very big. And, like, also, I just have, like, a weird fondness in my heart for it. And I think it's on Hulu and Netflix now. Dope. So that is Merlin.
Cool. I'm going to recommend 2016's Pete's Dragon remake.
Yeah!
I think it's really, really fucking good. And if you want to cry your eyes out,
I cried in the first 3 minutes of that film.
Yeah, it's David Lowery's remake. He's gone on to do The Old Man with the Gun and A Ghost Story, a couple really, really great movies that have come out in the last few years. But his Pete's Dragon remake was, I think, one of the only Disney live-action remakes that is necessary, or like, I guess, like, found a spot to be like, oh, this is what you can do with this now, and the dragon looks great and the movie works really, really well, and it's about a friendship between a boy and a CGI creature that makes you feel things. So that's it. Jay, do you have anything to plug, anything you want to talk about real quick that you're doing in quarantine? What are you doing to keep yourself sane right now?
Oh, I mean, right now, you know, I'm playing a lot of games. I'm having fun now with your podcast. I do really enjoy film fighting, stage fighting, stunts. And so sometimes I'll sit down, I'll listen to music, and I'll try to think about what kind of fight this would be. And I'll use a deck of cards to draw out moves for myself with a breakdown I have and put together a little fight.
That's cool.
So when this quarantine's all done, if you're someone who likes fighting or is in need of fights, I will plug Violent Delights. Stage
yes.
combat and intimacy design.
Nice.
We will bring the fights to you.
Hell yeah.
That's not our tagline. We don't have a tagline.
We'll take
tried
it, though,
for
now. I like you testing out tag. Phil, you are always welcome to come on here and test out taglines. We're definitely going to get you on another one in the future.
I would be honored.
Yes. Great. We don't really have anything to plug at the moment. We're
Same old shit.
thank you very much to the first responders and essential workers that are out there continuously right now helping us be safe here recording this podcast about Dragonheart. We're all doing important things. Also, as we've said in the past, if you have any extra dollars to throw around, we all know money's very tight right now, consider supporting a local business. Some of the small family-owned businesses that help give the community you live in and the neighborhood you live in the personality that it has. Thank you very much for listening, folks. Please make sure that you find us on Instagram at Not Another Film Podcast, on Facebook at Not Another Film Podcast, on Twitter at Film Another. You can send us an email at notanotherfilmpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you want us to do. We're literally just kind of doing this shit forever now. We've got for the first time in months have banked episodes. It's wild.
Yeah, we basically got this going on and a Mandalorian jigsaw puzzle. Like, that's it.
That's it.
That's our
life. Great. Jay, thank you so much for coming on. This was a delight.
Thank you for having me. It's been so much fun.
Awesome. thank you very much for listening, folks. Bye.